It's 12:37. A low-pressure system over central Minnesota will track into the Great Lakes region by tonight, along and to the north of the low across Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan. Several inches of snow will be likely today. Another storm system will enter the region on Thursday, bringing another round of mixed precipitation for Thursday night and Friday. This second system could bring several inches of snow to portions of the Midwest, making holiday travel difficult. Temperatures today will range from the upper teens across northwest Iowa to the mid-50s across southwestern Missouri. And the lows tonight will range from the low teens across southern Minnesota to the mid-30s in the Boot Heel of Missouri. A winter storm is expected to impact central and southeastern Illinois Thursday night and Friday. At this time, the potential exists for several inches of snowfall across parts of central and southeastern Illinois beginning late Thursday night and into Friday. The forecast as we have it at the moment for east central Illinois this afternoon, mostly cloudy with patchy fog. The high 38. The wind will be from the east at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low of 22 and a northwest wind from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a high of 28. The wind will be out of the northwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy with a low of 22 and a north wind from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Thursday, mostly cloudy with a high of 30. Thursday night, cloudy with a chance for snow after midnight, the low 22. Friday, snow likely, the high in the upper 20s. Friday night, cloudy with a chance of snow, the low in the low 20s. Christmas Day, mostly cloudy with a high in the mid-20s. Saturday night, mostly cloudy with a low in the mid-teens. At noon central time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from 30 degrees north to 48 degrees south. Chicago's O'Hare Airport reported 30 degrees, as did South Bend. It was 33 at Bloomington Normal, 37 in Effingham, 34 at Danville. Carbondale reported 48 degrees. Lafayette and Indianapolis reported 34 degrees. It was 35 at Terre Haute. In Evansville, 41. Willard Airport reported 33 degrees at the top of the hour. Cloudy with patchy fog. The dew point, 32. The wind out of the east at 8, giving us a wind chill index of 29. The relative humidity, 96%, and the barometric pressure, 29.98 and rising. And at 12:40 Central Time, 35 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois under cloudy skies with some patchy fog. Every week on Morning Edition, you hear people share their memories and stories on the long-running series StoryCorps. And now, as Illinois Public Media's Sean Powers reports, a Champaign elementary school is adopting the StoryCorps model, complete with musical backgrounds, as a way to teach English.
For the students in Olga Halpern's third-grade class at Booker T. Washington Elementary School, self-expression is an important part of learning how to speak English. Her class is made up entirely of Latino students, trying to get a grasp of English as their second language.
Then my dad bought me a dog. But he escaped. When I slept, I heard a gurgle, and I saw my puppy.
More than two dozen grade schoolers sit Indian style, listening to their classmates' audio-recorded essays. Some of the stories are a little more upbeat, like this one about one student's experience buying a chicken.
I ate out the chicken.
But other stories strike more of an emotional chord.
My grandma died in Chicago because my grandma was sick.
This one's from a student from Guatemala who grew up speaking a dialect known as Gangoval. He's the only one in this class who speaks neither English nor Spanish as his first language.
My dad take my grandma to the grave.
By the time his story ends, the class applauds. But there's a moment of silence before the next story begins. The student who talked about his grandmother's death emerges with tears running down his face and rushes out of the classroom. His teacher, Olga Halpern, comforts him. She says he's been sad before, but not like this.
He came here and started in an English, all English program, and then he got moved to here, to a Spanish program. So this poor child has gone in his short life through three different languages. So for him to put all those words down and to be able to say them, it was just huge.
The kids head to their desks after the listening session and get ready to leave for the day. This month-long project is over, but it won't be easily forgotten.
That's really embarrassed.
Oh, but it's so much fun to hear your story, isn't it?
I don't know.
Linda Sims is with the University of Illinois Center for Education in Small Urban Communities. Sims says allowing the students to record their stories helped them break down any fear they may have had about the project.
If they're reluctant to read, and what if I stammer over things, or what if I have to go back and say a line? Well, the beauty of it is that, you know, they can see, well, no, but the cool thing, you can go back and reread that, and then we'll just edit that part out. So I wonder if it just makes them braver, too.
Haney Yoon works with Linda and came up with the idea of adopting the StoryCorps concept in this third grade class.
We wanted them to see the correlation between reading and writing. So when they write, they also write to read. And so we wanted them to understand the idea of like reading it out loud and seeing a bigger purpose to just written words on the page.
While the program opens up a door for these kids to learn English, it also connects with them on a cultural level by including folklore and oral storytelling, which the project's organizers agree is very prominent in Latino culture. Yoon says this isn't the last time they're going to be doing something like this. Early next year, the class will recite poetry in English. I'm Sean Powers, Illinois Public Media.
Imagine Seattle and you might see images of the Space Needle or Mount Rainier. Probably not giant corporate signs, but a new city ordinance would allow some companies to hang their logos atop city skyscrapers. From member station WPLU, Bellamy Palethorpe reports.
A stunning view greets visitors to the 25th floor offices of the Greater Seattle Chamber of Commerce. With blustery skies and the Olympic Mountains as a backdrop, Elliott Bay is framed by dozens of skyscrapers. Business development manager Steve Gerritsen looks out the window at a shiny new tower that's right in the middle of the Seattle skyline.
You can see right through several of the floors. They're absolutely empty, so we really need to start filling the office space downtown.
The building he's looking at is the former headquarters of Seattle's famously failed Washington Mutual Bank. Many of its floors have now been taken over by Russell Investments. Russell wants to rebrand the building by putting a 10-foot-tall illuminated sign with its corporate logo on the top of the tower. That would require a change to the city's municipal code, which currently outlaws such signage. With Seattle's commercial vacancy rate heading toward 20%, Gerritsen thinks the change is necessary.
One of the few ways that we can show that we're a business-friendly community is by allowing companies that operate here, like many other cities do, to put up signs advertising their presence.
Russell Investments says putting up its sign would help it become a catalyst for an expanded financial sector, and it would show how competitive Seattle can be as it attempts to win new businesses. The Chamber's Senior Vice President George Allen says they've worked with the City Council to craft legislation that would preserve the beauty of the skyline.
The lighting cannot be garish, signs cannot spin, they cannot flash, they cannot be sort of video-oriented. They have to be very static, very controlled, and they have to be very tastefully done.
Look at this view. Why would you mess with this?
Jeffrey Oxner is a professor of architecture at the University of Washington. He stands on the other side of Elliott Bay. There's the futuristic Space Needle in the north, Mount Rainier to the south, and ferry boats in the foreground. Oxner says he loves the way the cityscape nestles into its natural surroundings.
It's just unbelievable how great this is.
He fears the skyline will soon be vandalized, not just by Russell's logo, but by more and more corporate clutter. And he doesn't buy the argument that the change would help the region's economy.
Companies do not move to cities because there are signs on the skylines. The cities that have allowed signs on the skyline are places like Detroit and Pittsburgh. And I would question whether those are the cities we ought to be emulating.
He says Pittsburgh is now struggling to tone down its commercial signage. Supporters of Seattle's new ordinance say it would only allow signs from companies occupying at least 200,000 square feet. At this point, that means only a handful would qualify. But for opponents like Ochsner, it's a slippery slope.
In my mind, there is no compromise. You either allow signs on the skyline and deface it forever, or you protect the skyline as we have for 50 years.
But business boosters and even Seattle's environmentally minded mayor, Mike McGinn, say there are much more outrageous demands companies could make.
This is a small ask to have a sign up if you're a major employer and to kind of get that recognition.
He says the signs would help the city show off some of its iconic businesses, such as Nordstrom, Starbucks, and Amazon.com. The city council plans to vote early next year on whether corporate signs would clutter the skyline or become part of the city's civic pride. For NPR News, I'm Bellamy Palethorpe in Seattle.
A divided Federal Communications Commission has approved new rules meant to prohibit broadband companies from interfering with internet traffic flowing to their customers. The FCC's three Democrats voted to pass the rules, while two Republicans opposed them, arguing that they amount to unnecessary regulation. The new rules are likely to face intense scrutiny on Capitol Hill once Republicans take over the House. Meanwhile, public interest groups decried the regulations as too weak, particularly for wireless systems. Known as net neutrality, the rules prohibit phone and cable companies from favoring or discriminating against internet content and services, such as those from rivals.
Hi, I'm Jeff Bossert.
I'm Tom Rogers.
I'm Celeste Quinn.
And I'm David Inge. You listen to us on WILO Radio and TV, and now we want to listen to you. Every month, we're out in the community having conversations about your hopes and challenges. What we hear impacts the programs we produce and the content we create. If you'd like us to have a community conversation in your town, give us a call at 217-333-7300 or email willconnect@illinois.edu.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 21st of December, 2010. Today's the winter solstice, the shortest day, the longest night in the Northern Hemisphere. It was Pietro Aretino back in the 15th century who said, "Let us love winter, for it is the spring of genius." William Blake said, "In seed time learn, in harvest teach, in winter enjoy." And it was Emily